the ultimate deck podcast. Need a show about outdoor living? This is where it's at, with your hosts Shane Chapman and Wade LaBrent. Thank you for tuning in. Now let the show begin. The ultimate deck podcast. Let's go.
Welcome back, everybody. Wade and Shane from the Ultimate Deck Podcast here on Thursday. Again, I don't know. This is probably going to get posted on a Monday, though, so that's going to make
that'll be weird.
Very little sense.
That'll be strange.
Leading it, so we were just talking off air about which home
we do,
shows.
We do this all the time. We should actually just record everything all the time.
Oh, boy. That's canceled for sure.
Whatever.
We would get canceled if we let the things that are in our minds make it onto recording somewhere. That's like we were recently at the Matt Rife show.
A comedy show.
And they were like, they were incredibly strict everywhere. They were reminding you, keep your phones away in your pocket.
You'll get hauled out of here.
If your phone leaves your pocket, there will not be a warning. You will be asked to leave immediately.
Yep.
You'll be escorted out. No phones. And then when Rife finally came on stage, he gave the why to that. He's like,
didn't he give it like partway through? He had given the series of jokes of why he wanted to bring that one word back.
Yeah, maybe. And this is like, why we can't have phones, because all you, somebody will post up there and
put a context.
Yeah.
And then I get canceled.
So anyways, we were just talking about home shows real quick. That's not what this episode's about, but we always shoot the shit first.
Yeah.
So we're shooting shit about home shows and how much we enjoy them personally. You and I like being at them.
I really do.
We've got some staff members that are like, they're not crazy about them.
Nope. But they have to work them because that's who the customers are going to see when they come in the store.
Right.
And
for us, especially these shows, this is the kickoff to the season. We've been hanging around all winter, like doing other shit. But now's your chance to actually start making money, for one, but actually is like talk to customers and homeowners and help solve problems. And
good prospecting.
Like, it's a fun time of year, in my opinion. But you absolutely get at a home shows what you put in. Because we were also just talking about some people go there with a shitty attitude and there's like, I don't want to be here. This is stupid. I'm just here because I have to be here. And it's like, well, with that attitude, you might as well just not be. Like, why?
Like,
you don't have to be here.
Yeah.
If you hate it here, go be happy somewhere else.
Because you could take that money and you could invest it into your customers a different way.
Yeah.
And so if you're just there because your competitor is there, then that's the wrong use of your money.
Right. I know that, I believe it's like, I don't know if it's Gary Vee, but somebody in the marketing world that talks all the time about like, I think it's Gary Vee. It's like, find the thing, if you hate being on camera, for one, try to work through that. But if you just aren't good at it, if you're just not good at speaking in front of camera, but you're really good at writing, then double down on writing. Write blogs, write articles, write newspaper stuff, write magazine stuff.
Yeah.
If that's what you're good at, do that. Lean into that. So same story here. If you hate trade shows, trust me, if your attitude is that you hate trade shows, that's coming across and it's not going to be as effective for you as it should be anyway.
People already know that.
So just don't do them.
They can tell.
Like, I remember that one year we sat across from a couple dudes and I don't know, they were selling houseboat tours or something.
Oh my goodness.
And they just like, I swear to God, they didn't get off their phones the entire weekend.
Phones, they didn't get off their chairs.
Right. Sitting in a chair, staring at the phone the whole weekend. Didn't look up to a single customer that was like even looking at shit that was sitting on their little table stand, didn't like engage with anybody. And then
you know for sure how that like debrief went, right?
Yeah.
It'll cost us like $4,000. And what a waste. We didn't get a single lead on
the show's
there.
Terrible. I remember we asked them, how was the show? Well, it sucks. You don't get any of these things. You don't say.
Want me to send
you a video of you? I saw people stopping at your booth all freaking week.
I should show you how unapproachable you are.
Yeah.
Here's the video of you.
And I remember another place that was like, I don't want to be specific to call them out, but I remember another place where it's like their booth is a bit bigger. They'd obviously cared enough to go beyond just the bare minimum. But again, the guys are sitting on chairs, chatting away, not looking or talking to anybody that's coming by. And it's just like, why bother?
Why bother?
So it's weird, man. The other aspect, I also don't like the guys that are standing half in the aisle and be like, hey,
come here.
A fridge? Want a fridge? No, I don't need a fridge. Well, not now. Never say never. Someday you're going to need a fridge.
Probably breaks down tonight.
That's like,
fridge can break down. You should buy this one just in case.
I don't want to be catcalled either.
Get out of here.
Be approachable. And then when somebody wants to talk to you, be engaged and helpful.
Yeah.
Simple. Frick.
Well,
Corey says, couldn't agree more. Love the shows. Hate the before and after. Yeah, nobody likes the setup and the takedown, especially the takedown, because the shows generally try to like stage the setup. So they have multiple days and they move people in at different times and you can get in a little bit easier and kind of go at your own pace. Getting out of those things is a
tire fire.
I try like,
it's a tire fire.
Pretty close to throwing F-bombs on this podcast. I've resisted for like 4.5 years, but there's been a few.
I think I threw one the other
recently. That's like, it's getting closer to the tip of my tongue. It just what came out there. It's not a great experience trying to get out of those shows. We just did it in Homestyles and it's like the show closes at 5 and at 4:30, there's shit banging around. People grabbing their stuff to pack up. Same dickheads that stand up on the plane before it's done. It's rolling.
Like, why do you really think that half packing up for the last half hour is actually helping you? Like, it's not helping you.
Yeah.
Cause you still have to carry all that stuff out. I don't get it, man.
And then the show organizers are on the PA system being like, if you had one PA system,
right?
If you listen to the last podcast, you'll understand that joke, but they're on the thing being like, vendors, please reminder not to start packing up before 5 o'clock. It's like,
you can all hear.
Don't go on the PA system. Drills are running.
You can hear the banners closing. It's like some dude like goes to close his roll up banner, but it slips and it's like, bang. Yeah. And you're like, that banner's done.
But then 5 o'clock does hit and the overhead doors roll up and it's a mad scramble to who can get their cube van backed up to the door first.
You know what we're going to do?
And then second, third, fourth, and it's packed there. It's just like, it's just,
I told Mikayla and the Saskatoon team that when this one closes in Saskatoon, we're going to Sports on Tap for wings.
100%.
We're going to go do that for an hour.
Go for dinner.
Yep.
Kill that first hour and a half because you're going to do nothing, but you're going to pack up what's at your booth and you're going to stand around waiting for your chance to get to the door anyway.
Yep.
Just go for supper.
Let the small people clear out. The guys that are selling the, like the Dr. Ho's and the candies and the chairs and all that stuff, let them out.
And let the guys, the rental company roll up the carpets and stuff too.
Yeah.
Because for a while they're like, don't put anything on the carpets because they're going to be rolling them up.
Yep.
Let that crap clear out a bit.
I think it's going to be an overall fantastic experience on this one, this Gardenscapes. I think it's going to be great.
It's good. I know there was a time like in Regina, you don't have to get out that same day. You can get out the next day. And that's fantastic.
Yep.
We've done that plenty of times where you go back the next day and the place is empty. Like 95% of people are out.
So good.
Your booth's sitting there in the middle of the ocean by itself. Yeah. And you back your trailer right up to it and just like,
that's totally the way to go.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, that's that. Who's in here? Who does home shows? What do you think? You like the home shows? I'm not talking going to trade shows for your own learning. I'm talking about you have a booth at a home show and is it helpful for your customers?
'Tis the season. It's a way to stay on top.
I was just like, you're welcome. Rearranging words there to like segue that.
Yeah. It's your second language. So I'll take care of some of them.
Yeah. Today's topic is it's hard to stay on top. So we're going to go through, like, there's no formal agenda to this one, but it's an interesting time right now in the decking industry. There's a lot going on and we wanted to talk a little bit about, like, it's hard to be the guy that's number one that everybody's chasing, that everybody's trying to knock down. And it feels like the seas are getting a little rougher in the industry of the decking stuff right now.
Absolutely.
And there's not a clear number one. I know that on paper there can be a clear number one, obviously Trex, but in reality, it's not like it was. There's a lot of players coming in this market. There's a lot of people clawing at their hind tail and like, as opposed to their foretail, you don't want to claw at the foretail.
I don't know of a single creature that has a foretail.
Pretty serious reaction if you start clawing at the foretail. Hindquarters, maybe I was trying to say.
Yeah.
Quickly, Scott from Fortress says, I love the shows and TC Dex says, I did my first one last year and didn't seem worth it to me. Yeah, yeah. Sitting on his phone the whole time.
Did you take your hammock? Was your hammock in your booth?
Certainly, it's probably a little bit like there's good shows and bad shows too. Like, I know that we always say, like, Regina Spring Home Show is a really well run show. It's like, it's always really good. There's other shows that maybe don't quite have the crowd and stuff too. So it depends on the show. And maybe it's regional.
Like,
too.
I think that the Saskatoon shows could be much stronger. I think that they could blend those two shows into one. And I think it would be a
begging flat from day one.
Pretty
combine
excellent.
Those shows. Have one mega show.
Yeah, but they couldn't, then they can't compete with each other. So
I went to our local homes home show just to see, and there was at least 7 or 8 deck builders in it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that makes a difference too. Like in the shows here, like Saskatoon, there's for sure more builders are partaking that. That's not fair to say anymore. more deck builders maybe, but in Regina there's less deck builder building contractors, but tons of landscapers, it seems. Yes. Who may do some decks here and there. But anyway, that's not the topic. The topic is where do you want to go with this first? I feel like it's a easy example to talk about Trex and the composite deck industry.
Yeah, we might as well. I think everybody would be very familiar with that.
Yeah. And so Trex is obviously the most powerful brand in maintenance, potentially even in outdoor living, period. But certainly within composite decking, composite decking.
Yeah.
Trex is really synonymous with outdoor, like carefree outdoor living, like maintenance-free, enjoy your backyard, outdoor living, which is crazy because I think even people that aren't in they're not building a deck today still are aware of that brand. How many other product categories can you say that when people aren't even currently purchasing or shopping within that category still recognize your brand? Like, you'd probably be hard pressed for most people to tell you a brand of like paver or fence when they're not in the middle of doing the research, but most people could probably name Trex even if they're not currently or have ever built a deck.
Yeah.
Like, that's how powerful that brand is.
Maybe the only one that I can think of is like in the car industry. So somebody could name off like a couple of manufacturers.
Sure.
Whether you're in the industry or market for a car or not.
Yeah. But even in that, I don't know that there's one brand of car that is so much more powerful than all the competitors, you know? If you were to go to a group of people and be like, name all the composite decking brands that you've heard of. It's like most people probably be like Trex and like, that's it.
That's probably
just Trex.
Yep.
Cars, they'd be like, oh, Ford, Chevy, Mazda, Toyota, like they'd be on and on and on.
Yep.
But anyway, that's a tough spot to be in because you're the one that everybody is chasing.
Yep.
And so not only from an external competitive circumstance is that difficult because everybody's trying to chase you, but also from your own internal corporate culture and mental, like how you think about your own business is affected when you're so far number one, because we've seen this play out nearly in every industry in the world, that the number one at some point falls.
Always.
It is nearly impossible to stay on top forever. I mean, Trex has done it for 2 decades now, which is super impressive.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's cracks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And this is not to say
their brand is on top for sure.
Yeah.
And like, unfortunately, this isn't meant to be a knock on Trex podcast. Like, this is an anti-Trex.
It's actually a giant compliment to say, like, this is how good they've been or are. This is not, but you're in number one, so you get a podcast about you.
Yeah. And then, but also, so people are going to come for you and they're coming and here's why.
Yeah. And so in this specific industry, I would say that like for the homeowner in the general public, I would say that Trex for sure is still like undeniably the most well-known brand. And like, that's what people,
it's not even close actually. Yeah. It's still like, we go to our trade shows, the home show that we just worked in Saskatoon, Home Styles.
Yeah.
And at least 50 people said to me that they wanted a Trex deck.
Yeah. So the brand is completely synonymous with the category. They have achieved what only a few brands have done out there.
Kleenex.
Coke. Sure. Skidoo. There's just sometimes products that brands become so powerful in the category that they become the brand of the category.
And that's a funny story about Skidoo. Impressive.
Sure.
So my girlfriend wanted to get her snow machine fixed, but she called it a Skidoo to me. It was like, I need to get my Skidoo tuned up. And I was like, oh, okay. Is it like, I didn't think to ask if that was the brand. I just assumed that that was the brand.
Yeah.
So I lined it all up to have it looked at in Regina. She was in Saskatoon. Her snow machine was in Oxbow or something. Anyway, so it was traveling through Regina. So I was like, well, I'll line it up with a Skidoo dealer here and we'll drop it off and get it looked up.
Yeah.
And so I dropped it off and left her machine. And as I pulled up with the Arctic Cat to the Skidoo dealership, I called and was like, is this actually who we should be taking this to? Or do you want to take this to an Arctic Cat dealership? And she was like, well, Skidoo's a Skidoo. And I was like, it's not. Like, you wouldn't take your Dodge truck to the Ford dealership to be repaired. You would take it to the Dodge dealership.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's exactly it. It was like, brand was so strong that that's just what she calls it. It was a Skidoo. And I was like, it's not. It's an Arctic Cat. That's
yeah. It. Not to go down. I don't know why I preface that with that sometimes. Not to go down, then I do anyway.
You did anyways.
But what's that game? Is it called Spikeball? That's what it's called.
Yep.
So Spikeball.
That's a fun game.
I've never played it, but I believe it would be very fun. I've never played.
You should do it. Well, you don't drink anymore. But if you did, you could get a little bit carried away. And all of a sudden you're like diving and belly flopping all over the sand. Like that little wee inhibition that like goes away with three or four drinks. Like you'll never have that again.
Yeah.
You'll be like, I might hurt myself.
Yeah, sounds
silly.
Safe.
That's silly.
Safe. But I listened to a podcast, I think it was one time, or maybe it was a book. I think it was a podcast about Spikeball and how that whole brand and sport, whatever, came to be and evolved and whatever else. And I remember that there was a portion of their story in their history that their intention was to they weren't only trying to grow the brand of what they did. They were trying to create a sport and a like a league around it because that's how they thought they would make it grow into a worldwide phenomenon, I guess, or respected sport was to become like, they were trying to invent a sport as well as a product, right?
Yep.
It wasn't like they were releasing a new type of football to play football with. They were releasing the product and the sport.
Yep.
And they thought that the way to do that was to create a league that was going to be like worldwide. Regardless, what they wanted to call the league was, it was a long time ago, so forgive me, I'm for sure going to have like not complete accurate details here, but let's say they wanted to call it like the National Spikeball League or something, right? Yep. And their brand lawyers would come up and be like, you can't do that. And they're like, why not? That's what we call, that was the name of the product and the sport. So it was a spikeball net that you played spikeball with.
Yeah.
And they're like, you can't do that because what happens is if your brand becomes too big and too well known and it becomes synonymous with the sport itself, then you will lose your trademark. You lose your ability to own that name because I can't remember all the details, but it's kind of like how nobody can trademark basketball.
Yeah. If it's there's something about this. So we're doing some trademark stuff ourselves and I've talked to our lawyers about it, and that's true. You're not allowed to trademark something that is like just so common.
Right.
If it's like the word deck, you can't trademark deck. You can't trademark one-stop shop because it's too common.
Yeah. It becomes part of the cultural of the language and you can't own that.
Yeah.
So that's why they basically had to rename the sport to netball.
Okay.
And so the league is called whatever, the International Netball Association or whatever it's called.
Okay.
But it was like they had to delineate the product branding from the sport branding or else they were going to lose it, lose their trademark on spikeball. So I don't know where we're going with that. It's just like we talked about how like strong these brands can be, and it's like you all of a sudden the category gets like it becomes part of the language, and it's like,
yeah.
But anyway, so what I'm saying is with the general public, I feel like Trex is still really, really strong. Nobody's out marketing Trex in the general space. TimberTech, maybe like close, but I think still a distant second as far as brand awareness goes.
I think so too.
But in the realm of the contractor world and within the industry, there's been some changes happening there. Absolutely. So I think you saw UFP make a big push with decorators.
Yep.
I believe that you had tons and tons of guys who used to be Trex guys or TimberTech guys move towards decorators. Why? Well, I think for one, the product was innovative, solved some problems that maybe the other traditional wood plastic composites had.
Yeah.
So they came out with a really great product. Step number one.
Yes.
And step number two is that they've made a lot of effort of like catering and marketing directly to the contractors more than the general public. So now you had like great product aligned with customer base that felt like you were taking care of them, like you're paying attention.
Yeah.
And so that changed the game a little bit within the contractor world. I feel like that shift is starting to happen again a little bit. And I feel like contractors are becoming a little bit less brand loyal potentially.
Yeah. It certainly seems like they want to continue to work with good products, but any of the builders or any of the contractors that are really good and using good products and making lots of money and doing big jobs, they don't need taken care of as much, right? Yeah. They don't need, like, if the product is good enough that they're able to put out a great product, then they make enough money that they don't need you to buy them supper. They can buy their own supper.
Yeah.
And so like, it's a little bit like it's, it's a little bit tricky in that everybody likes to be taken care of, but at the same time, everybody likes to be able to take care of themselves as well, right? They like to be able to say, yeah, you know what? Like, I build these great products and I make good money at it and I can take care of my own team and I can take care of my own expenses. I don't need you to look after me, right? And so I think there's a move right now that's happening with contractors that are pushing that way, right? There's a lot of guys that are like, I'm going to be the big dog all by myself.
Yeah. But I also think too that decorators, when it came up with the Voyage line, had some innovations within that the industry hadn't really seen for a few years.
Yes.
So for the longest time, like generation one composite was generation one composite. It did what it did. Then when they came up with capped composite decking, it was like, that was an innovation that people started to take notice of because it brought additional value and benefit to the customer of like, hey, this stuff won't fade and stain and the color is more vibrant and whatever else.
Yeah.
And we can provide a longer warranty with it now and et cetera.
Yeah.
So it was like a big change, but the industry kind of all went there fairly quickly. Like they all kind of jumped on board of that.
Yes.
And then there was, I would say arguably wasn't really a whole lot of innovation from the time that released until the decorator's product came out. And all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, what's the problem with composite decking? Well, like it expands and contracts quite a bit. So it's like not ideal on your joints and stuff. It looks kind of crappy over time. It's typically very slippery. So decorators came out with a product where it's like, they were the only ones who'd really figured out, the only one on a massively distributed scale that figured out the expansion contraction thing. It's like, now the board's stable. It's like, okay, well now for the contractors who care about the craftsmanship of their work, that matters quite a bit.
It does.
And the traction's freaking incredible and nobody else can hardly touch it.
Yep.
It's like, okay, so they've really differentiated themselves with the product. So now you've piqued the interest of the influencers who are trying to like, who care about the craft and want to do the best and use the best and everything else. Now it's like, oh, what's this? But as guys and gals are keen to that now that they're like, they want to use the best, whatever, they're also more willing to not just be as brand loyal because they want to use the latest and greatest. So something else new comes along, their head turns a little bit. And maybe in the past it wouldn't have. It's like, no, right. I'm a checks contractor I feel taken care of and they're the best board. And it's like now it's a lot harder to me, in my opinion today, to say who makes the best deck board out there today. 10 years ago, you're going to say Trex. 2-3 years ago, you might have said decorators. And I feel like that's a hard question to answer again now. We've seen decorators for sure lose their edge. At least in our market, we've seen them. We have like really not great experiences in our market. I'll leave it at that. Everlast has now come out. They're catching some attention.
Because they're doing some things differently.
Innovative products,
exactly. They're doing, and so, yeah, I think to your point where it was like guys used to be so loyal that they would never change, I think they found out they were maybe making mistakes. They were maybe leaving some quality products on the table by not looking around.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden it's like, well, you know what? Like Trex isn't going to look after me if there's like a really big problem later on. They say they will, but ultimately it's all hidden behind. And that's not just a knock at Trex. It's every brand in the whole world writes a bunch of legal so they don't have to warranty anything. They say they have a warranty, but it's like, it's hard to get that warranty actually to work for you.
Yeah.
And so as a builder, you need to make sure that you're using products that are good for you. And the first time you step out and look at a new product, that's the hardest one. And then after that, you're like, oh, wow, I use that decorator stuff. That was really fantastic. Yep. You know what? Like I've always used Regal Rail. They're also huge at brand and I always did that. But now like, I don't know, Vista's making cable. Like maybe I could just work with Vista as well. Doesn't mean I have to stop working with Regal, but doing myself a disservice and my customers a disservice by not opening my eyes a little bit and looking around.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, but I haven't mentioned Millboard yet. So Millboard comes in too. So now you've got these, let's say Trex, decorators, Everlast, Millboard. I would say maybe the four that are like making the biggest splash in the contractor community right now.
Yeah.
And so they're all differentiated a bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like when you're asking somebody, it's like, what's the difference between Trex and Fibron and TimberTech? Like you gotta start getting into the nitty gritty to be like, well, this one technically is this much better because of this. And it's like, that's debatable.
Yeah.
They just have their own ways of doing it. But now it's like, well, you've got what Trex is known for and you've got Millboard, which is a completely different product. comes in different dimensions, looks different, has a different cap, different properties, different installation methods, different everything.
Yep.
So it's like, if you like that, great. You've got Evolast, which is like, is really making a splash in the photo print world. So if you're looking for something super realistic to hardwood decking, it's like, well, that looks really good. You've got, who else did I say?
Decorators.
Who's got their unique look, and it's like their big thing is like traction and expansion contraction with meal board can also make claim to that too. So it's like,
yeah, and that's what I mean. And their manufacturer's different, right? They're like, it's a whole strand technology, and it's a like made with limestone. Like they're actually, the core of their board is different. They've done some different stuff.
So which one's best? It's like, that's hard to answer now.
Yeah, they're all pretty good.
Depends on what you value the most. Do you want something that looks the most realistic? Okay, well, that's a wash between Millboard and Evolast Pioneer, in my opinion, because, and I believe that the nod goes to Millboard as to what's going to fool somebody into thinking it's real wood, that one. Because the Pioneer looks absolutely beautiful and gorgeous, and it's a picture of real wood, so clearly it looks realistic. Yep. However, it in a way, it kind of looks like not engineered, but laminate flooring, where it's like, it's a picture of real wood. It's not real wood.
Which, when we've started to talk about this, we're talking lots more about how designers are actually going inside and outside of the house now too. And so if you're able to find a deck board that looks exactly like a laminate or so similar to the laminate you're using, and you want to extend that look, well then now Evolast is the best board because it matches your house the best.
Yeah.
It's not the best board because it doesn't expand and contract. It's the best board for you. And as a contractor, that becomes the best board for your client.
Yeah.
Now you, so.
And so it's easy for them to turn heads because it's different. And I understand that Zuri's been out for a long time and it's done that.
Yeah.
And I understand that for a moment in time, Murite was out at one point. It's not the first photo print decking available, but it's the first one in a while. And it's the first one that's maybe like really gotten the attention of the contractor community. Like Zuri just kind of almost seems like it's just kind of like, it's okay with its niche of very specific regional markets. And like, it just doesn't seem to have had a mass appeal. Well,
wasn't the cap just slightly different, right? It didn't have that acrylic cap on top of it. So it did scratch a little bit easier. And so there were some improvements on what Zuri's done.
TC Deck says, great insight. Very much agree with your perspectives. I've thought the same thing. I hated how Trex bullied you into being brand loyal. So did a certain TimberTech rep. Seems like they're starting to back off. So I think they got a little bit. But the other thing I wanted to say to this is like, because they're doing things a little bit differently, it's interesting. It's catching people's attention. Is somebody going to switch to Evolast or switch to Millboard? Maybe not, but they're at least looking at it and being like, does this make sense for me? And what Trex is releasing new boards too.
Yeah.
But it's not as exciting. It doesn't catch your attention much because it's like, well, it's the same Trex board, just a new finish to it.
Yeah.
New finish on top. I get that the signature line is technically a different capping on it and whatever too. But it's the same core. There's nothing like visually it looks nicer.
Yeah.
It is the most durable Trex board that they've released. Sure. Yep. But it's just like, it's hard to get as excited about it because it's just not, it still feels like just another.
The other thing that happens, and there's like points about this later on in the podcast, but what happens when they start to price this product is they only look internally. So like Trex has now released this new line. And they're like, well, this is a really great product and it's really valuable and it's for sure the best board we've released. Signature is like the greatest product we have. So now we have to price that accordingly in our lineup. And what happens is they price that accordingly in their lineup, but then they've lost touch where that pricing needs to be in market because they don't pay attention to what's happening around them. They're all like, when you're on the top, you look internally because you're like, we're the best. I'm the best. This is what we're doing is the best. And so the only way to be better is to beat ourselves. And so you spend all this time looking at like yourself internally.
Yeah.
And you lose touch with what's happening outside of the world. So you have a photo print board that's being sold by Trex that is 20, 30, 40 times percent higher than what other photo print boards are in market. And it's like, well, is your board 30% better than this board? Nope. There's no chance it is. So it's dangerous on top for that reason, right?
Yeah. I think
some perspective.
Yeah. I think when you're on top, not just Trex or any, but for anybody, it's you lose your desire to innovate a little bit because you're like, well, we have the best product. We don't have to innovate anymore. But the problem for everybody trying to catch up to you is that they're absolutely innovating to try to do something better.
Right.
Because it's you're not going to outmarket Trex. As a small guy coming up, you're not going to be like, we're just going to spend more money and we're going to like, we're going to buy a piece of the consumer's mind.
Yeah.
Impossibly expensive.
That right now is.
Can't do that.
Right now you can't. With
you have to open eyes with the product first and then hope that you can spend to get there. Like you just have to have a different strategy. So it's tough. But for the guy on top, it's like I'm not suggesting that the writing's on the wall by any means, but if you look at some industries where people forgot to innovate or resisted innovation, resisted what customers were looking for. BlackBerry being a very famous example. It's like, man, they hung onto that keyboard forever. It actually buried them.
Yeah.
Because they were like, no, they got too, what do they want to call it?
Romanticized.
Too romantic with the past.
Yeah.
That's what got them to where they were. So they just kept trying to force it down people's throats. And the market was saying, no. Like, we're okay. We don't want keyboards. This let's one's way away. Cooler over here.
Yeah, let's move away.
And they push back to the point, and it buried them in the end. So which it's like,
too bad.
That's tough because when you're on top and all you see is like how great you are and like all the headlines, you're reading your own headlines and it's just all rosy news. And it's like, it's easy to sit back and be like, okay, maintain status quo.
Yeah.
Make minor tweaks. But sometimes the whole category is changing around you. And if you don't continue to lead on the innovation front, then you at some point get left behind.
Yep.
And I like the quote, I wrote it down here, that it's better to put yourself out of business and have somebody else do it for you.
Yes.
So it's like, sometimes it's scary to release a new category because it's like, it's going to cannibalize what we already do and it's going to take a business right here. It's like, yeah, but if you don't do it, somebody else will.
That's right.
You don't get to have the world moves fast. You don't get to have a product that's just number one forever.
Yep.
Somebody, especially in an industry that's on trend and like growing as much as this, there's lots of people that want a piece of your pie.
Yeah. And everybody's watching. And the people that are watching are homeowners, architects, designers, contractors, right? It's not just one group of people. It's like, because you're attached to the house or you're in the housing industry, there's lots of people that are watching and lots of people that are looking for new products and the next greatest thing. Yeah. So you don't have to appeal to just contractors or just homeowners. You have a whole industry that you have to appeal to.
Yep.
Because landscapers are going to start looking at the products that they're pairing with. And, you know, like commercial buildings are looking at colors and products that they're matching to or using with. It's just like, it is massive.
Yep.
And everyone's coming.
Yeah. And I would say that, like, this is going to sound maybe a little bit egotistical, but I believe that in our market, we're the top dog as far as if you're going to shop for materials to build a deck, there's nobody that does it better than us. We take advantage of the fact that we're in a smaller market, that it doesn't even make sense for a store like this to exist here, but we did it. And so we have an advantage that way. Like we're competing against traditional lumberyards and box stores who won't ever probably put as much effort into the outdoor living space as we do because it's just a portion of their business. But there's no denying the fact that like since we've come along, they've tried a lot harder. They're mimicking things that we do.
Certainly.
And so if we don't continue to try to reinvent ourselves and to improve ourselves all the time, then at some point we get left in the dark. Our competitive advantage, the reason that people shop with us is going to completely, or like over time, it'll dwindle.
Yep.
Like you have a big advantage. So it's really obvious why people should shop with you. And as people carve away at that, it's like, if it becomes too small, then it's just more convenient to shop somewhere else maybe.
Yep.
So we've got to continuously do things to maintain that gap.
That's right.
And if we don't, we're in trouble too.
We go home.
So that's all we're saying.
You just gotta, it's just like, it's hard to stay on top and you have to like, I think one of the things that I think is the largest contributing factor to falling off of the top is that you don't look at what's happening around you enough. You just don't pay attention to what everyone else is doing.
Yeah.
And it gets a little bit crazy. So like different railing companies and Trex again with their aluminum railing, like when they brought it out, they're just like, this is the greatest thing. It's like welded panels and it goes together so fast. And they were so excited about it. And it was just like, yeah, it's That's the same as what Fortress is.
Compared to our own composite rail.
Compared to your own composite rail, it's right. so much less money. It's only $75 a lineal foot, and our composite rail is $110. And it's just like, yeah, but everybody else is doing aluminum rail for $45. So yep. now what? Now how do I justify yours? It's like, well, it goes together faster. Mm. Fortress goes together pretty fast.
Yeah, not as faster than yours.
Faster than your composite,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And so it's always tricky to make sure that you're like really aware of what's happening outside of your organization.
Yeah.
Even if you're a contractor and you're like the best contractor and you're killing it in landscape. And it's like, what are your competitors doing right now? Why are you losing jobs? And if you are losing jobs that you are aware of, it's like, find out why that happened and then start to fix that, because that's the first sign that it's all coming down.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. From the contractor perspective, you just got to continuously reinvent yourself as well. Because 10 years ago, it was probably good enough just to be the composite deck guy.
Yeah.
You're the guy who does composite decks when everybody else is doing wood. That's how you could set yourself apart.
Yep.
But as more and more people start to also install composite decks
and specialize in it,
it's like, what sets you apart anymore? It's yep. like nothing. So if you don't continue to move forward, innovate, reinvent yourself, then you just get lost in the crowd.
Yep.
And so then all of a sudden, maybe you need to be the guy who like, always picture frames his deck and always skirts his decks in or builds his stairs a certain way just to maintain being ahead of the next guy. But then everybody yeah. else starts to do that too. And then so when you get your next, well, now I'm going to start tackling the whole backyard. So that makes it easier for the customer or whatever. Like,
or it comes with a design. It's just like sure, a really, through, really yeah. small 3D design at the start.
For a while, like 5 years ago, if you did a 3D design, nobody else is doing it. It's like, that was a really big deal, big differentiator for you is to be like, oh, well, I'm going to work with this guy because I already know what it's going to look like at the end.
Yep.
I don't have to like take a chance. There's less risk in it for me.
Yep.
The more risk you can remove from interaction with the customer, the higher chance you have of closing that deal.
Correct.
So at that one point that helped, but that is so accessible now to anybody
yep.
that everybody can do that.
Yep.
So now what's it going to be? Now how are you going to set yourself apart?
Yep.
So you got to continue to grow.
Yeah.
Put yourself out of business for somebody
Put
else does it for
you.
Put yourself
out of business.
Yeah. So any more to talk about on that, or have we beat this horse?
Yeah, I think that's it. Was there anything on there? You get too comfortable. So that happens. We did talk about that. Lose touch with the why. So that's important. I think for us, we're constantly trying to answer the why are customers here? Why, like, why do they talk to us? Right. And as long as you listen to that customer and you listen to what they're actually asking you.
Yeah.
Don't go like, don't try to fix a problem that isn't even a problem. It's like, maybe it's a problem for you.
Yeah.
We don't have a $15 a foot board. Well, that's not a problem in the industry. Nobody was asking for that. Everybody's asking for less expensive boards because of carbon tax and the cost of food and the whatever interest rates are up. I was like, you know what we should do in this really tough economical time? We should create the most expensive board that's ever existed.
Yeah.
That's silly.
Certainly.
Maybe that works.
But I love it too.
Maybe that works for some of your customers, but
it is.
It's so small.
It is. Over the last few years, there's been a bit of an arms race to who can release the bestest looking, bestest performing high-end deck board out there. And all it's done is drive cost. Like you look at, you know, Trek Signature, you look at Everlast Pioneer, you look at anybody's high-end board and they're expensive. Like we're now into the, like in Canadian dollars, we're into the $12, $13, $14, $15, $16. You start talking about like,
that's 30
no board and stuff
that's
per linear.
$33, $35 a square foot for just the deck board.
Yeah. We're only probably 6 years removed from the highest cost boards being in the $6 to $7 range Canadian.
So I was
literally doubled it.
I was
products are better, but
a site this morning and we were talking about this lady has a deck that's she's talking about changing to a ground level deck. This is a perfect example of why we've moved into hardscapes. There's a time when you shouldn't sell someone a deck when it's 6 inches off the ground. It's just going to rot fast and blah, blah, blah. Like you can do steel framing to mitigate that, but probably the right thing to do is a patio. And so today we were talking and she's like, the deck that she's looking at is going to be $50 a square foot. And I was like, well, there's an opportunity for us to do a $30 a square foot or a $35 a square foot patio. Are you interested in that? She's like, oh, you know what? That'd be really great. Cause then I could put a pergola up here and put a privacy wall on this side. There you go. Now you can help them, right? And so when the world is trying to find a less expensive option for outdoor living, there are the industry leaders right now are like, they're racing to the most expensive product. And it's like, well, you're not listening to your customers. You're not answering the why. Nobody was asking for a $33 a square foot deck board.
Yeah.
That's not what they wanted. So
yeah, it can be not a bad strategy though to just position yourself as an industry leader or as a large brand by having the best product as well. Maybe the intent isn't even to sell a whole bunch of that. Maybe that's not where the bread is.
That's okay. Baked. Hopefully their intent is that, and they don't manufacture a bunch of it because they're not going to sell a lot of it.
Yeah. Well, I was just talking about this with Peregrine Landscape at the home show earlier today. And Tony said something that I know resonated with me because I've thought the same thing too. He's like, I used to have a big problem with shopping with my own wallet or selling with my own wallet, somebody a wallet. And like, I'm using my own financial position as a frame of reference as to what other people can afford. And he's like, that's not the case. There's absolutely people that would spend and not even think 2 seconds about it, about spending $30 a square foot in a deck because they make more money than you and I do. So
deck board. Then they got to frame it. Then they got to put the...
Sure. Doesn't matter. There's some people that $100 a square foot and $200 a square foot doesn't... It's the same. Matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's like they make millions. So whether their project costs $50,000 or $75,000 is like...
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. I want what I want.
That's
I want
true.
The best.
Yeah.
So there's that component. But there'll always be people with money. But the majority of the market, the middle class... is not shopping there. That's for damn sure. And the middle class right now is like poorer than they've ever been. So they need that low cost option. But
it's tough right now.
Avalos has done a good job of releasing a game changing, attention grabbing high end board at a high end price.
Yep.
And has simultaneously put into market a low cost composite that's going to appeal to a lot of people because, to your point, things are getting more expensive and life's getting more expensive and there's less disposable income. And if we just keep like, it used to be years ago, it was like, what's the cost difference between treated deck and composite deck? And it's like, well, I don't know, maybe double. Like between the boards themselves, the treated deck board is going to be a buck a linear foot and the composites are going to start at $250.
Yep.
So about 2.5 times. Okay. And now in 2024, the wood deck board, still about a buck, not much more than a buck a linear foot.
That's right.
But now the high-end composite is 13.
Yep.
Releasing a low-end composite that's still at $349 is like a pretty smart strategy.
Yeah.
And in my humble opinion, it's getting harder and harder because the gap between low-end budget composite and high-end composite is getting harder and harder to justify. Because it used to be that somebody's entry-level board was $3 linear foot and their high-end board was $6 linear foot. And now what we're looking at is entry-level board is $3.5 and high-end is $12.5.
15.
That's a big gap. Is it worth it to spend like 3 to 4 times more? It's like, it's getting harder to say that it is. Like, what's the real difference? It looks nicer, clearly. Like, this one looks pretty good too, but this one looks more realistic.
Right.
Warranty similar. They're both maintenance free.
Yeah.
This one's scalloped. What does that mean? Well, it's got this shit in it. Does that matter? Not like on paper. Yes. Once it's down, you'll never know it's there. Okay. Well then it's like, it's harder to justify going up. So
very hard.
That middle ground. Like we say them for years, I feel like that middle ground is going to get the snot beat out of it. But maybe
it has.
Maybe it's starting to come back the other way where it's like, so the middle ground is like, well, why would I spend any more if the entry levels are looking this good and their price is attractive?
Yeah.
Or you've got people who's like, money's not a concern. Give me the best looking shit out there. But like, who's buying the middle? But maybe the top end is getting so expensive that you're starting to see some people who are like, no, I want the
middle.
I want the best. I want all the features of the best, but I don't want to, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Do you have something in the $6 to $8 range that gives me all the same benefits?
Yeah.
Yep.
We do. Yeah. Yeah. I think that, over the last few years, we have seen that. We've seen the middle get like kind of forgotten, like all middle children do. They just get forgotten.
But I mean, the high end, what once used to be high end boards is kind of the new middle.
Yeah.
Trex Transcend is the middle now. Because Lineage is out and Signature's out.
For them it is, but the rest of the industry, it's at their middle is at where everybody else's top is.
But price point though, Decker's Voyage is their high-end board, but price-wise on the wall, it's actually middle price point now.
Right.
Because there's $12 and $14 boards out there now.
Yep.
They're still sitting at $8.5. So it's pretty, like I said, the seas are getting a little rough in this space. Baxter Construction says, when is the 24 Gold Flake deck board coming out? Like, they're putting all sorts of shit in these boards now. Like, I wouldn't rate it out.
Could be any day.
He's got fiberglass sheets inside there now, and some guys are like, bamboo is better.
Bamboo is better. My deck board's the best because I put hardwood in it. My deck board's best because I put bamboo in it.
So, like, it's a joke till it's not anymore. Right? Somebody's going to have a shimmery gold dusted deck board here at some point.
It's happening.
Only a matter of time. Do you remember, like,
and then we're going to sell it to Baxter because he's going to install it. He'd be like, right? I remember asking for that.
That's a real thing, and it seems funny, but it's like, it's not even that funny because I remember my previous life, I sold, like, I was the marketing, like the product manager essentially for a telecom company that launched, like, we launched all the cell phones. So, like, you'd work with, at that time, I was working with BlackBerry and Samsung and everybody else to choose what phones our network was going to launch. And at that time, it was like, there was budget phones, and there was mid-tier phones, and there was high-end phones. The high-end phone was like an iPhone, right? Or a Samsung Galaxy at that time, two. Whatever number we were on at that point.
Yep.
And then I remember, like, there was a whole other market. And I don't remember what it was called. There used to be a store in Vegas in Caesar's Palace, I think it was. It started with a V. It was called, like, Virtuous or something. And what they did was they took BlackBerries and tricked them out. Like, you'd actually have, like, buttons that were diamonds and shit. Like, they would literally, like, pop the case off. They'd redo these BlackBerries and sell them for, like, $20,000.
Yeah, yeah.
Diamond-encrusted BlackBerry with gold, like, just asinine stuff.
Yep.
So it's like, we went there with cell phones.
Yes.
Not completely. It's not crazy to think that you're going to have gold railing at some point.
If you had gold on there, you could probably sell it in Dubai. Right?
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Without a doubt, there's gold railing on a deck. In a place like that.
Yeah, we're just in the wrong market, that's all.
Yeah. This one has great traction because of the diamond fleck in it. Hardest material in the world. And it really grips your shoes. Yeah,
it's hard on your shoes.
Shred off the sole of them. Pretty funny stuff. So anyways, hopefully we didn't piss anybody off in this podcast. I know Trex's name came up a bit because... But
they're at the top.
Flattery, dude. They've been crushing it for how long? And it's just like there's a lot of attention on them right now and there's a lot of competitors trying to chew away and they're making some inroads. Yep. We might come back to this in 3 years now and be like, turns out it was just all like, what's the saying? All's something and no sizzle. All's, you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
The brands right now that were like, oh, they're making a splash, but they may not get anywhere. Like, just because they're getting a bit of attention doesn't mean that they're all smoke, no sizzle. Yeah. That's what it is. So maybe it's just some of that. Like in 4 years from now, we might be like, well, Trek's still number one. And these other guys that were making inroads are not anymore. So, who knows?
It's very possible.
But yeah. All we're saying is that it's hard to stay on top.
Yep.
See you next week.
Hey, thank you for listening to the Ultimate Deck Podcast. Now you know what we're about. Check the site, come and shop, ultimatedeckshop.com. Hit us right away for sponsorships or tell us if you want to collaborate. Let's go. Check us out on any social networks. Thank you for listening.